The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. I don't know. I'm just sitting here and just looking at different stories.
No, okay.
Another high school here. This was in Ohio, Port Clinton, Ohio. No longer naming a valedictorian.
No, you can't do that. That's wrong.
I'm just looking for I'm looking for any type of graduation stories that exist out there. That's why.
For all the graduates, good luck. You're doomed. Don't try. You shouldn't. The government will do it for you. There. Of course, if you're a graduate of a major university, you've already been taught that over the last 4 years, I'm sure.
And I've been sitting here going through all my audio cuts here trying to find, because I know I played it last night, and I'm trying to find an audio cut where the president talked about, I think he had said 500 miles of the wall has been built or is being built.
Hmm. I know they've done the surveys they have done, the land surveys they have done, included, I don't know how many hundreds of miles they've done on surveys.
I think I have it here. I want to play this audio cut here if I could, please.
All right.
Okay, here we go. I think I did find it. Here we go.
The wall is being built as we speak. We'll have almost 500 miles of wall by the end of next year. It's terrible.
Okay.
Terrible.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection has put up just 1.7 miles of fencing with the $1.57 billion the Congress appropriated last year for President Donald Trump's border wall along the Mexican border, a federal judge was told. A lawyer for the U.S. House of Representatives provided the information Tuesday to a judge in Oakland, California, who is weighing requests from 20 state attorney generals and the Sierra Club to block Trump from using funds not authorized by Congress to build the wall. The administration recently provided updated information to Congress on the status of its efforts as of April 30th, 2019, the attorney said in a court filing. Based on the updated information, it appears that the Customs and Border Protection has now constructed 1.7 miles of fencing with its fiscal 2018 funding. Hmm. That was 3/4 of a mile more than the administration reported at the end of February. U.S. District Judge had asked for the information at a May 17th hearing. Representatives of Customs and Border Protection did not immediately respond to a request for comment after regular business hours. So I just wanted to see what the president was saying as to what we actually have when it comes to border wall. But what the president said was up to 500 miles by the end of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, the surveys have been done for I don't know how many hundreds of miles. That was one of the things that spurred one of the first court cases, actually, on eminent domain. But it was one of the first court cases that was filed. And they had been doing the surveys. The federal government had been doing the surveys for a while. It goes back to, I think, the beginning of 2018, if not before, that they started doing those surveys. So don't know where they will go. How long will that take? Well, if they're not getting the funding, they're not going to get very far, A. And B, don't know that they're going to be able to get 500 miles done by the end of next year. If we're talking fencing, maybe a couple hundred miles, maybe. But you need massive crews on that kind of job. But we'll see.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
Maybe not if it's fencing, but if it's a wall, yes.
No, I think even for fencing, you're going to need, massive crews out there.
You mean if you're looking at the kind of fencing that we're not talking, right? We're not talking barbed wire. We're talking the slats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Then.
And depending on the terrain, of course.
I just seen the story of that reporter, and I remember I had played an audio just before we were coming in. I had played the audio yesterday, and so when I saw the story, I just related to it and went, wait a minute, what did he say yesterday? And I wasn't sure whether he said 500 had been built or 500 at a time to be determined, and it was at a time to be determined. So you can't really fact check that.
Nope. Can you expect that to happen again between now and the end of next year, 18 months, again, depending on the size of the crew?
Well, and depending on the lawsuits.
It's not totally impossible.
Right.
And the lawsuits on eminent domain are going to stop everything.
Well,
lack of funding.
The lawsuit's right there, because that's the lawsuit I just brought up, is a lawsuit of the fact that he can't transfer the funds.
Mm-hmm.
And a judge may decide, sorry, you can't do that. Then it does stop at that point.
Yeah, all the lawsuits combined will be the first block. The major block is the funding, really.
But remember,
if you don't have the funding, then it's not going to get done.
Remember,
anyway,
the 2018 money that they're talking about, this is the 2018 money, not the 2019 money that the president is allocating himself. So that's going back to the 2018 money that actually was appropriated by Congress the beginning of 2018.
Was it appropriated for 500 miles of fencing?
No, it was appropriated.
Okay, yeah.
Money was appropriated, $1.57 billion. For fencing, fencing or wall, whatever,
right?
Whatever you wish to call it, and that was at the beginning of 2018. It hasn't been any part of the debate that we've had over the last 6 months, or closing of the government whatsoever. This was a deal they made last year.
So I don't think that 1.57 includes a 500 mile span.
No.
That's my whole point. Funding is going to be your first hurdle.
Well, that's the whole point. He wanted to know what's been built so far and what.
Right.
You know, what money has been appropriated, because these 20 groups, as was in the story, are suing and saying you president can't transfer the money. So the 500 miles may never happen, or the 100 miles may never happen if the judge comes down and says, sorry, you can't transfer that kind of money. It's already been allocated.
Mm-hmm. And if he wins that lawsuit, the next in line will be eminent domain.
Yes.
So.
New York Times editor predicts doom for local newspapers. Most will die in the next 5 years. This was from Mediaite.com. The greatest crisis in American journalism is the death of local news. I don't know what the answer is. The economic model is now gone. I think most local newspapers in America are going to die in the next 5 years, except for the ones that have been bought by a local billionaire. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that everybody who cares about news, myself included, and all of you should take this on as an issue, he added, because we're going to wake up one day and there's going to be an entire state with no journalism, or with little tiny pockets of journalism. The editor noted that he isn't worried about Los Angeles and New York, but is concerned about what the model is for covering the school boards in Newark, New Jersey. That makes me nervous. Well, look, in most places, I mean, you look at a place like where we live in Dallas, or any large city, where you have how many different communities?
Oh, I don't know. A few dozen.
Oh, yeah, a few dozens. Mm-hmm. Local newspaper can't cover them in depth, everything that goes on. It's impossible.
Right.
But they couldn't cover it 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you had that big, the big cities get, you know, the news coverage, but most local ones don't. Now, you do have, I will say one thing that I did notice. Print apparently is going, but the local magazines that represent my town and city on lifestyles are going through the roof.
Because they can get advertising.
So that would be my next question.
Mm-hmm.
If they can get massive advertising, and because that's what I have seen really increased, and I get these. I live in the border of basically two cities, and I get both cities, and I get like four publications a month,
right?
And these are, you know, beautiful, high glossy magazine like where there's a ton of money that has to go into it, and they're loaded with local advertising. And I'm wondering if that isn't the future of very local news for communities. If it works there, why not put on a reporter?
Yeah, I guess it comes down to this.
I'm not saying you do it, because if that business model is working, you're not going to change it if it's just lifestyles. But I'll tell you, I get these and they go right in the trash. I don't read them.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know how effective they are, but they certainly do have a business model, because every little town across America seems to have these magazines out there, which seem to be majority of just advertisements. But they're
right.
Glossy and they're beautiful, and
yeah.
They have stories of families in the community, in the different sub. We have one that's broken down really to a couple of subdivisions, and it's really done well. Except I don't care what's in it.
Well, and again, it also comes down to a more targeted advertising base. You're talking about the big companies who want to do business there, that are set up there, and the small companies. You know, there are very old businesses in most major metro areas, and those, they want to stay local. They want to get involved, and they have a greater showing in a magazine like that. A lifestyle magazine is almost a no-brainer. It's the easy listening of news. You can put it on in the background and not offend anyone. A lifestyle magazine of, hey, where are the great places to eat?
Yes,
what is
exactly.
Where are the concerts? All that is something that people do gravitate towards, because there is that interest. But then you get into the different stories of your local city council. Fort Worth fired their police chief.
Right.
All these things. And you put it in a news form. The difference there is that the content can be shared or can be across many different news organizations. It's not exclusive. But if a local lifestyle magazine goes and does something and a focus on something, that content is exclusive. It may be very targeted, but it is exclusive content that you're likely not going to find somewhere else.
When people say, well, yeah, but for example, we're not going to be a good coverage of what happens at City Hall. But if they stream it, you get it right to your computer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you care about it, you can actually see it firsthand.
That's
you
the point. Not, if you really care about these things,
right.
there are ways to find
them. You may not have a reporter writing on it that is very convenient, that has been convenient in the past for you, which was, I pick up the morning local newspaper and they covered what happened. You just go straight to the city website and you watch the city council meeting yourself.
Well, I think that television probably is feeling the pinch there too, depending on how much coverage they have, how many news hours they have in their daily program locally.
Outside of the CAD videos?
Well, that's my point. Think about that. The only thing they could do is find something of common interest. The viral stuff. That's what GMA decided to go to years ago, where they sit on this huge panel. Oh, they cover the news stories, but they spend more on all these other things. Well, they're not doing it because they don't keep doing it because ratings are down. They do it because ratings are up. When you have a local news station, your local news station is probably feeling the pinch of, again, okay, we're going to have this story coming up at 10 o'clock, whatever it is, 11 o'clock, and people can Google it right there. You know, the police chief is fired.
Right.
We'll have the complete story at 10. No, you won't, because I'm going to get it right now. Newspapers, in terms of the hard copy, their circulation is limited. Once it goes to print, the moment it goes to print, it's dated.
Yeah, especially now.
And so it's going to be on those companies, those news organizations, to offer something that's worth paying for. I suspect that if they went to, the paywall is what, $10 a month on many of them? Much higher for the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
But $10 on per month on many of them. But the problem is that if you want to get four or five of them, you're up to $50 a month for newspapers. If you want Washington Post and the New York Times.
Now, you don't think about it until you go back and think that 20 years ago, I had no problem paying 50 cents a piece
a day,
for
right.
four different newspapers.
Right, and a buck on
right,
Sunday.
Right. So I was paying $2 a day, which hit $60 anyway.
Oh yeah.
But I wasn't thinking it because I wasn't getting billed for it monthly. It was just the change coming out of my pocket every day.
Yeah, for us it was 50 cents a day, and then so that would have been $3 for the week, and then $4 including Sundays. So you're up to $4 a week, $28 a month,
right,
for your local newspaper.
Yes,
that's a lot more than $10 a month. So you can look at the business model and say, well, yeah. I think if they did access per story, they might actually make more money and people might pay per story. If there's a huge story that comes down, pay $1.50 for this. Boom. Instead of the commitment of paying $10 for the paywall every month.
Here's a question I ask. Is that a better business model? Because if I see a great story, not a huge breaking story, but just a great story that I'm interested in, I'd pay 25 cents for it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'd pay 50 cents for it.
Right.
I wouldn't. I wonder if the a la carte for stories in a newspaper, put down all the stories and then say you can either get it the entire day for a buck and do it by the day instead of the month.
Well,
you can get today's edition for a buck, mm-hmm. Monday's edition, for example, if they're mm-hmm. covering sports because of the NFL game for the night before.
Right.
And you charge $1 for that. Or each story a la carte, which
and
would
then
be 25, 50
cents. And then I can look back after a month and I can say, okay, it would have been better just to get the monthly.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to build the content out in order mm-hmm. to make that happen. They're going to have to be consistent. And they're going to have to do real journalism.
And no print. Print will be gone.
Yeah, I can't see print lasting.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
RoadCheck is an important part of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's strategy for keeping our highways safe. This year, the Inspection Blitz will take place from June 4th to the 6th and will focus on steering and suspension systems. Start preparing for RoadCheck now with a few simple checks before your next route. Check your ball joints and tie rods to ensure they're tight. Check the steering gearbox for any leaks and make sure your steering gear mounting hardware is tight and secure. Lastly, make sure the pitman arm pinch bolt and nut are tight. Take your RoadCheck prep one step further. Stop into a participating TA truck service May 1st through June 6th and receive a free mid-trip inspection to help avoid being placed out of service.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Arthur in Racine, Wisconsin. Arthur, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, good evening, or good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I wanted to call to let you know that I do believe that the subscription problem with the print media is just because there's no journalistic integrity. I mean, when I look at the paper, I don't want to hear about how bad Trump is or how great the liberal policies are or the Green Plan or whatever it is. You know, I want to know what both sides of the facts are.
Look, undoubtedly, that's part of it, but that's not the major reason. The major reason is people don't read print anymore.
Yeah, we've got the news in the palm of our hands,
right,
literally,
right.
with our smartphones.
It's on our smartphones. We don't need the subscriptions to do it. And since circulations have gone down and advertising has gone down, that's what's destroying the print media. I'm not saying journalistic integrity isn't part of it, but the real big reason is technology.
Well, and I think that's, you know, the bias in the media, I think, is a given. It's been there for a while, and it's likely not going to be reversed. There's likely not going to be this effort by them collectively to say, oh, no, we need to set our biases aside and go back to journalism. Unfortunately, yeah, that's just not going to happen.
Everybody,
I think that train left the station a long time ago.
Everybody's print edition has been devastated,
yes,
over the last 20 years.
show that never stops. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, as we talk about the New York Times editor stating the doomation, the local media, local newspapers are doomed, and that's the headline, and most will die in the next 5 years. We talk about the paywalls and things like that, but you and I both noticed, in the Daily Caller, I don't know how long ago it was, some time ago, how they would put a risque story in there.
Yeah.
Remember, you'd have politics. It would be Trump says this, Pelosi says this, Nadler says this, bikini-clad women on beach. You notice Fox doing it now?
Yeah.
I notice almost every day there's a fluff story totally in there. Here's the one I'm looking at right now on Fox. Halle Berry defends latest topless cooking photo.
We want your opinion of this photo. Click here.
This is amazing to see this one. Maren Morse opens up about personal struggles after horrible breakup. Mm-hmm. They're throwing in TMZ type of stories now. Fox is even on their website if you go to it. I wonder what their demographic research shows. Okay, we want news, but please TMZ it up a little bit, will you? And give us some skin. Can we get some skin? Can we get some risque stories in there? Because we've noticed it at Fox and at the Daily Caller. Daily Caller had done it some time ago, and we noticed it. It seems to be recent for Fox. Is there demographic research showing them that people are saying that? News is okay, but gives us some TMZ. In a day and age, Eric, when you have all the night shows, it used to be entertainment shows, now political shows, does everybody have to compete for the same audience?
Yeah, you're going to have to add some things in there that are a given in terms of the click on any digital format or platform.
I'm not going to take off my clothes.
Good. Then you'll keep getting clicks.
By the way, I love looking at here. Wake up call. Maren Morris, the country artist, opens up about personal struggles after horrible breakup. Funny, the reason I say I love seeing that story. Mm-hmm. I remember when she was a nobody in Fort Worth. Remember that?
I'm not connecting. I don't know who Maren Morris is.
Oh, she's a country artist from Fort Worth, Texas. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. She's won Grammys and everything.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. She went big time. And I'm a great guy who listens to our show, plays guitar, told me about her about 10 years ago. He was her guitarist. Hmm. Said, oh, she's really, really good. He goes, really? He said, you know me. I won't play with anybody who's not good. She's really, really good. He was sort of like a mentor to her.
Okay.
And she's really big in Nashville now.
Okay.
So that's why Fox News had put her on the front page, because.
Yeah. All right. That relates to people who follow today's country music. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But, I mean, you have to be, you're a 24-hour news organization. You're going to have to be everything to everybody. That's the attempt. You can't possibly cover it all, but you can cover all areas.
Yes.
And that's the idea. I don't put that much into the entertainment stories or someone's breakup.
Neither do I.
I don't care about their breakup.
Even though if there's breaking news out of Hollywood, I will go to TMZ.
Mm-hmm. Well, something happens if a celebrity dies.
Celebrity dies, right.
Because Harvey Levin has a lot of contacts. In law enforcement, and they often get the heads up and they get stuff on stories fairly early, and they've been right on a number of things. You know, other than that, I really don't care about TMZ, right? Yeah. I only care about it if something's happened. All right, was this what was behind this? If it tends to be a bigger story, then and they're on it, they tend to have a lot of the things first.
The only thing that when the TV show's on once in a while,
mm-hmm.
I'll watch it for 30 seconds.
Right.
Because I like how they slurp on their drinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? They're always, they've always got a cup in his
straw. I think the TV show is actually very funny and entertaining. Yeah. It's different, though, than what they actually do sometimes on the website, if you've noticed that.
Right.
They actually, with some stories, they go more serious online, especially if it's a breaking story, because that's what they do. But the TV show is more of a, you know, it's the staff basically discussing stories, and usually it's fairly funny.
I remember, I can sit there and think that, you know, how when Michael Jackson died and the, you know, and being on TMZ, and that was the same time I think Farrah Fawcett died at the same time.
And yeah, it was
and
the same day.
And then I remember Tom Petty's death.
Yeah.
And TMZ covering it because the whole thing was, you know, what did he, how did he die? What's going on?
Right.
And just that, that, so you do actually go to, they do have credibility when it comes to that kind of breaking news.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, Harvey Levin is, has a lot of friends in law enforcement and in the courts. So, yeah, certainly.
But it's just a really interesting article. The New York Times editor stating, unless you're owned by a billion, which did that mean the Washington Post and his paper? But when you look at it overall, that you need, and I don't really subscribe to anything. I do subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. I do pay for the Wall Street Journal. That's expensive, though.
Yeah, it is.
But it is for what we do when you're a show that talks politics and economics, especially in economics, understanding the markets and what goes on, there is no better source in the world, in my opinion, overall day to day, that can get you through the maze of everything that's going on in an or, in an organized way, where you don't have to spend, because a lot of times to get the information elsewhere might take you a year to get a lot of the information, but the way they have it set up, you can find out most things that are going on economically.
I think that the Wall Street Journal, New York, or I'm sorry, Washington Post, and the New York Times, I think they have people on their staff that are capable of doing really solid work. They most often choose not to. I can't tell you why. When they chose the road of
you included the Wall Street Journal in there?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No, Washington Post, New York Times.
Okay.
I don't know why they chose to, you know, to just be a an activist, many of them. Why they think that work is going to actually get them street cred as an activist, because at some point you're going to be proven wrong.
Didn't the editor say that, though, that every time they have a Trump story?
Yeah.
That if it's negative, the clicks go up big time.
Right, right, because the liberals buy into it. It's it goes back to what Maureen Dowd said. Negative news, they shut the door. They turn off the TV. Negative news on Trump, they'll click all day long. That can only last for so long. Now, I know the next person is going to be more evil. The next Republican running for president or becomes president will be more evil.
By the way, who is that going to be going to be more evil than Trump?
Well,
Let's try to predict that one.
Tell me what they're going to do.
She has to be more evil than Trump.
Well, what do they have to do with the vice president? I mean, imagine that he runs and the president wins a second term and that the vice president, Mike Pence, runs in 2024 and he wins. Well, they're already on that. Mayor Pete had to come out and create a fake war, and the media helped him do that when Mike Pence hadn't even said anything. So they'll have to make it up. They'll have to just make it up. They'll write it like a Hollywood script.
We do live in a society with short memories. We go back, though, because we do talk radio, and we remember those moments. We remember the furor and the hate of George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
He was called Hitler, and it was Bill Maher who said it. Yeah. Bush was Hitler, and Romney was Hitler, and McCain was Hitler when he ran.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we really didn't mean it. But Trump really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and that's where they're going to go again. That the next person that it doesn't end with Trump. Oh, okay, we're done.
Right.
Now the Republican is okay.
Right.
No, the demonization will continue way after Trump is gone on every single Republican. And I don't know how you up the hype of evil that they have transferred to Trump. Because it's gone beyond Hitler, it's gone to the devil, it's gone.
But if they're willing to make up a huge narrative that has gone on for more than, we'll be entering to almost 2.5 years. If you think about it, think about this, because that narrative first began there in the halls at the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
They were conjuring up this plan in the summer of 2016. Maybe even before that, we're heading into 3 years of this kind of behavior. If they're willing to do that and take it to the level that they did over the last 18 to 24 months in the media, they're willing to make anything up. Anything at all. So that's what they'll do. They'll continue to do the same. And at some point, they'll look back and wonder why people turned away. As many clicks as you get, how many is it that would have been there before that aren't there? Because once Trump is gone, there's not going to be, I'm sorry, but Pence isn't going to be the excitement. I don't care who it is, actually. I don't know anybody that's going to live up to that kind of excitement and be tweeting stuff every day like the current president. So regardless of who it is, Democrat or otherwise, what do?
From a personal standpoint, yes, I will have to retire when Trump is done, because it won't be anything to talk about anymore.
How is the left going to take on someone who's not tweeting every day, who's not saying anything, who may go a few days without saying something of note?
And I think it's important that you say that, because you and I remember that President Obama, in his first year, he kept doing press conferences, and you and I said, you need to stop doing press conferences. You stink at them.
Well, his numbers were going down.
Right. His numbers were going down. And we said, you need to take like a 9 to 10 month break. We couldn't believe it.
Right.
He took like a 9 to 10 month break.
Yeah.
And he did not do a press conference. Nothing came up. That couldn't happen today.
No.
People are going to wonder, why has he disappeared? Everything, the president did it. Remember, because you and I remember getting to September and October of that year stating, can you believe it, the president? And it was probably, March or April of 2010 where he stops. And it was just like, how long is this? Or excuse me, of 2009. We said, how long is this going to go on? And then he started coming out more. He started doing press conference again because Obamacare was heating up in the fall of 2009. Mm-hmm. But you and I were amazed how long he stayed out of the public view.
Mm-hmm.
Public appearances, yes, how you doing, what's going on, the coverage of him going to the helicopter, but for press conferences, there wasn't anything.
So right now, the two guys that lead in the polls right now up against Hitler, Trump, are Biden and Bernie. What if Biden becomes president? You talk about a yawn fest. Seriously. It's going to be a yawn fest. Now, in the mainstream media.
Right.
For us, of course, we're going to be at it every day like we are. It doesn't matter who the president is. But it will be very, very different for them. And I wonder if that 5 years will even go that long.
I can just see one of the headlines. He's an aging president, but he brings grace to the White House.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can only say that a few times. The honeymoon will end very quickly on that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll talk about the news of today. It's still going to be about McGahn, the president's one of the president's former personal lawyers, and that's not going to go anywhere with the Democrats because separation of powers. They've been blabbing for the last couple of days about it, that he has to address their subpoena. No, he does not. There is clear precedent for this. Years, decades of precedent on this. Just like the president can't just tell a member of Congress that they have to stand before him and testify, Congress cannot go to the president or his close advisors, that is the executive branch, and say, you must testify before us. His department heads, yes, because their budgets come from Congress, and Congress has specific oversight over those departments. They do not have it over the president. It's clear. It's a dumb argument. They're consistently lying about it, and we'll get to that and more.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Interesting day yesterday. Let's hear from Gavel Nadler.
Let me be clear. This committee will hear Mr. McGahn's testimony, even if we have to go to court to secure it. We will not allow the president to prevent the American people from hearing from this witness.
All right, so there you go, the whole Don McGahn thing, and they want him to testify. The president's former White House counsel, I said personal lawyer. I know Giuliani says personal lawyer. I meant personal White House lawyer, so I should have not put personal in there. I meant White House lawyer.
Right.
Just to make sure that we make that absolutely clear, which then after Nadler, the throng of Democrats now moving closer to impeachment over McGahn and Barr not willing to testify before the lawyers, because he is willing to testify before Congress, not their lawyers, which is a keen distinction. Here's Elijah Cummings on impeachment.
I'm getting there. I think what the president has done has put us in a position where we cannot get any information to do the oversight that we need to do.
Here's AOC.
I think impeaching and choosing to not impeach when there's an abundance of evidence could also be construed as politically motivated as well. And we can't be scared of elections. We need to uphold the rule of law.
And that goes directly at Nancy Pelosi, who they say doesn't want to go in that direction because of politics, and that they could lose in 2020 if they go that way. She claimed in that meeting she's doing it for the American people. Let's now hear from Adam Schiff.
I think the case gets stronger the more they stonewall the Congress.
That's very interesting with Adam Schiff, because Adam Schiff, as you and I have said, is the person who should actually be testifying before Congress, and the Democrats should be demanding that he testify before Congress, because he, as recently as a month ago, was continuing to say he has seen the evidence of collusion. Well, if he's seen it and won't testify about it and won't let the American public know, wow, that really, really is just a strange.
Nadler should be calling across the hall to get Adam Schiff to testify before the American people. What is Adam Schiff hiding? Right. Why is he protecting the president?
I mean, the only other thing would be Adam Schiff has been lying all this time, and we can't imagine that a Democrat would lie for 2 years.
No.
Let us now go and hear from skater Bob Beto O'Rourke on impeachment.
It's an incredibly serious, sober decision that we should make as a country. Really, the last resort when every other option has failed us. And at this point, where the president has refused to respond to any subpoena, where his attorney general will not testify, where he will not furnish other witnesses so that we can find out what happened to this great democracy in 2016. I think this moment calls for us to look beyond the politics and the polling and even the next election. It's the very sanctity of the ballot box and the very future of the world's greatest democracy. And if this is important to us, and I think it is, then we need to look past those short-term consequences to the consequences to the future of this country.
It's very important to understand that Beto O'Rourke lied in there where he said Barr will not testify. Barr has said he will testify before the House Judiciary Committee. He said he does not wish to testify before their lawyers and be asked questions by their lawyers. As he has said, he is only by law obligated to go before Congress, not their lawyers.
And he's also not going to go outside the rule of law and present a fully unredacted report.
As to the Don McGahn thing, this finally got to me yesterday. We didn't even bring it up the last 2 days because it's just stupid. They're claiming that he has to testify. No, he doesn't. And this is very simple for people who understand the separation of powers. The majority of America does not understand the separation of powers, which is why the Democrats will continue to lie about it, is because they know, look, we can lie because they're ignorant. Well, the media is not going to call us on our lies. But, of course, whether you call it immunity, whether you call it executive privilege, the president and his close staff do not have to testify before Congress because it's a separation of powers thing. It's like the president can't demand that Gerald Nadler sit before him and his panel and answer questions. Well, why can't the why can only Congress do it to the president and the president can't do it to Congress? Well, what they're saying is they gave up executive privilege when McGahn testified before Robert Mueller. Therefore, there is no executive privilege anymore. That's false. Because Robert Mueller, people understand, works for the executive branch. The executive branch is not giving up executive privilege when they allow one of their own to testify before the executive branch. Mm-hmm. They are not giving up any type of immunity or any type of executive privilege towards Congress. Congress is a different branch of government there. Okay, are we done today with separation of powers 101?
I doubt it.
Do we not?
No, we're not, because people still don't get it. They just don't learn. They really don't. And here's the thing, though. Kimberly Strassel, Wall Street Journal, it was almost 2 weeks ago. She wrote, "What does Nadler really want? He wants the show." That was the conclusion, basically, that she came to. And this article really lined out a number of things. But he's trying to put on the show. But he's trying to, in this show, what he's trying to do is send out subpoenas. He wants America to be ignorant and not realize that the rules cannot be changed through a subpoena. He wants them to be ignorant on the three branches of government, which we've brought you the polls. We already know that a great number of them are, unfortunately. And so he wants them to stay there in their ignorant little corner and not have any pushback, not have any question as to his behavior. But the facts, the reality, the law does not change as a result of a subpoena. They know by pushing things and issuing subpoenas that nobody in their right mind would respond to. They can make it look like in the media that the president is hiding something.
Right, and the difference is the president and his immediate staff. People that he appoints to departments where Congress has congressional oversight over, like the attorney general, like members of his cabinet, can be forced to testify before members of Congress because there's oversight there. Congress does not have oversight over the president.
Right.
The president doesn't have oversight over Congress. The president can't call Gerald Nadler to testify in front of him. Now, when we talked about, for example, William Barr, the head of the Department of Justice, they are overseen by Congress. He is willing to testify before Congress. He testified before the members of the Senate. He was willing and made it clear, I am willing to testify before the members of the House Judiciary Committee. They came in and said, well, we're going to have you testify before our staff lawyers. He said, nope, I will testify before you. So there is no law that is broken. There's no constitutional crisis whatsoever.
No.
They are making it up as they go along, and they are out and out right lying about it because they believe, hey, when the polling's out there that almost three quarters of America can't name all three branches of government, it means Americans have no idea what separation of power is. They have no idea. Right. When it comes to the Electoral College, people that are saying that we need to be a direct democracy have no idea why the Electoral College even exists. They don't understand why the Senate exists. They don't know the history of the country. They are completely and totally ignorant, and the Democrat Party is banking on the fact that the people that vote for them are ignorant, and they also believe stupid, because we can sell them anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically, that's gist of it. I mean, there really isn't much more to go on it. Didn't even bring it up the last couple of days, the whole Don McGahn thing, because the precedent was so clear. It was so stupid until the Democrats started doubling down on it yesterday. And it's like, okay, got to bring it up. It just, and as I said earlier, it sort of gets to the point of we at times believe that we're just repeating ourselves over and over again. And we say to ourselves, you know, I say to myself, why am I repeating myself? It seems like sometimes every day I go in and say the same thing. I'm like, oh, that's because the opposition, the people that aren't telling the truth, are saying the same thing over and over again and can't back it up. So the only way that I can defeat them, because it's the story of the day every day, is to use the truth. And the truth is going to be the same every single day. But sometimes it gets boring because it's like you're just up against this brick wall of complete lies and delusional thought. And it's just like it doesn't matter to them.
No.
They don't care. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about lying. They don't care about having a complete delusional mindset. This gets us back earlier to talking about the whole transgender thing again. They don't mind it. Well,
no.
I mean, we got to the point yesterday where the head of Planned Parenthood was out saying that abortion laws today punish more than women.
Mm-hmm.
It punishes men who think they're women. Excuse me. It punishes men who think they're women.
Mm-hmm.
But not women that think they're men, because if they're women that think they're men, then they're men, so they can't be women. So they're it gets very, very confusing. Mm-hmm. It gets to the whole point that we're seeing now. Tucker Carlson talked about it last night and pointed out to the NBC story about the man being pregnant headline.
No,
men can't be pregnant.
That's a woman living as a man who is pregnant.
And our whole point is, oh, well, then wait a minute. Is Planned Parenthood actually saying then that men do have a say in abortion?
Right.
I mean, it just gets to be this complete
circus. How do you write the laws if you're one of these over the top liberals and you become a lawmaker? You become the president. How would you, if you were to craft the laws and the rules? How do you do it? How do you do it? You know, former President Obama talking about how they're in a circular firing squad. The party is in a circular firing squad. In other words, they're going after each other, and it's not going to stop. You helped create that.
Yeah, you did.
So don't act like none of it is because of you. By the way, this is also the reason you created a party that within just a couple of years no longer needs you.
But where will they go on impeachment? I don't know. We have told the White House, look, just don't say anything about it.
Be
just
done.
Say, nope, sorry.
Nope.
Don't get into arguments about it. Let them argue between themselves, you know, we'll take a look at it every once in a while as we do and say, okay, did they make any sense today? It's a different person stating the same stupid thing that they stated yesterday. Just like when the whole thing about, well, it's a Republican representative out of Michigan. Uh-huh. It's a Republican, and he's a conservative libertarian, and he says Trump should be impeached. And we had to go point by point on his argument, and there was nothing new, and there was nothing there.
Over and over again.
Over and over. Different people saying the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly now the Democrats just want to get into a shouting match with Republicans, and so they make these absurd allegations that are just out and out right lies. And the White House does feel like they should respond. And so when they respond, the fight continues. We've suggested the White House, hey, just don't respond anymore.
Right.
Move on. Because how long will the impeachment go if they're just talking between themselves?
Let them stand in their circular firing squad.
Yeah. Because that's where it is right now.
That's where it is.
They're mad at, make them mad at Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
The anger's at Nancy Pelosi, who doesn't want to do it. And if you and if they want to sit there and impeach, let him do it. Go ahead and impeach.
They're the ones that put her in as speaker.
Yeah.
And if she decides otherwise, that they want to go ahead and move forward with it, please bring it on. Please bring it on.
Because the whole point is they're saying that they wish to, think about this. The two major things are they want to impeach the president. Because the attorney general wouldn't break the law.
Yeah.
And that his White House lawyer will not testify when the precedent through the history of the United States is absolutely clear of the immunity and executive privilege that that position carries.
Mm-hmm.
You wish to impeach on that? Really? I think you should.
Go forward. Go ahead.
866-90-RED-EYE.
USDA Undersecretary Greg Ibaugh testified before a House subcommittee about the country's animal, pest, and disease prevention and response capabilities. He says ag quarantine inspection officers are on the front lines.
They inspect cargo and passengers coming into the country to ensure these import protocols are met. If a pest or disease ever makes it into the country, our surveillance and detection programs allow us to identify it and swiftly begin a targeted containment, control, and eradication response.
He says foot and mouth disease has been kept out of the country for 90 years and that he hopes for the same with Asian swine fever or ASF.
We have been monitoring outbreaks of ASF in Europe and Asia for a number of years. An outbreak in the U.S. would have severe economic consequences, especially considering there is no vaccine available.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, the United States apparently seen signs that the Syrian government may be using chemical weapons again, including an alleged chlorine attack on Sunday in northwest Syria, the State Department said just yesterday. So we'll have that story coming up. You know, they said that, and it wasn't as big of a news item as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because that is another unstable part that includes the Russians.
Yes. And that goes back to the decision to withdraw troops from Syria. What do you do in a situation like this if you have evidence and you believe that Syria is using chemical weapons again? What do you do from there? Here's your forecast.
That risk for severe weather in the south today is much diminished, as that frontal boundary that was causing all the issues is finally pushing off to the east. Low pressure in the center of the country is going to continue to drive snow showers to the higher elevations of the northern Rockies. If you're planning on some vacationing this weekend for Memorial Day in, say, around Yellowstone, you'll want to keep an eye on the forecast because we have snow out for that area today and may still be a factor this weekend. Portions of I-15, perhaps as far as I-25 in Wyoming, could see some white stuff, especially at higher elevations. There'll be rain at the lower elevations the next several days. Helena at 300 feet, all rain. Yellowstone up at 6,000 feet, we've got snow. What was left of southern severe weather will continue to produce light rain from the Ark-La-Tex region up through the Great Lakes. Most of the northeast, mid-Atlantic, and south will be dry. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
DPF is cleaned. Their DEF is in the SCR. Their ELDs are up to date, but their CDLs are expired. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
All true.
Yep. Whatever.
I don't care. Whatever expires, expires.
I just want to play this quick audio cut here. This is Chuck Todd talking to top White House Democratic Democrat James Clyburn yesterday. You ready? Here we go.
All right. If you did a secret ballot among the Democratic caucus, yes or no on impeachment, what would the majority likely be?
Oh, the majority would be no.
There you go.
Okay. Okay, then you're going to go for it then. What you're saying is there's a chance. It's if the soft head count is no, then you don't bring it to a vote. Unless you bring it to a vote so that the extreme left can have their voice and go back to their district and go, see, I voted for impeachment, knowing it wasn't going to happen. That would be the only point.
But then that, to me, the big question is every single day they're moving the rhetoric up higher.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they eventually stop?
Yeah, I don't know where they, how high they go. I mean, they're trying to issue a subpoena for everybody on the planet. Pretty much. I think Macaulay Culkin, because he once appeared in a movie, Home Alone 2, with Donald Trump in one scene. I think Macaulay Culkin may be called to testify. But they've gone so far off of the edge. Where do you go next? Where do you go to pretend like you're fighting? Because that's all they're doing. Nadler doesn't want the real fight because he's going to lose. They don't want the real fight on impeachment because they're going to lose. So what next fake fight? Forget the fake news. Fake fighting, fake representation. We're going to pretend like we're standing up for something. Nope, doesn't work. If you can't go the full measure, if you're not willing to fight for the people in your district, then what good are you? Well, they don't have to. They just have to pretend, and they get away with it. Nancy knows. You can't bring this to a vote. You can't. We're not going to move to impeach the president. The only thing you're going to do is empower his base, if not grow it. It's the only effect. That's the only effect for this particular president. If you had something on him, that would have happened, and you might have more Republicans, more than one or two Republicans mm-hmm. on board. If you had something on him, but you don't.
In other news, the White House sees signs that the Syrian government may be using chemical weapons, including an alleged chlorine attack on Sunday in northwest Syria. The State Department said on Tuesday, warning that Washington and its allies would respond quickly and appropriately if this were proven. This from U.S. News, and we'll report, unfortunately, we continue to see signs that the Assad regime may be renewing its use of chemical weapons, including an alleged chlorine attack in northwest Syria on the morning of May 19th. State Department spokeswoman Morgan Ortega said in a statement, "We are still gathering information on this incident, but we repeat our warning that if Assad regime uses chemical weapons, the United States and our allies will respond quickly and appropriately." Ortega said the alleged attack was part of a violent campaign by Syrian President Bashar Assad's forces, violating a ceasefire that had protected several million civilians in the greater Idlib area. The regime's attacks against communities in northwest Syria must end. The statement says United States reiterates its warnings, first issued by President Trump in September of 2018, that an attack against the de-escalation zone would be a reckless escalation that threatens to destabilize its region. The Trump administration has twice bombed Syria over Assad's alleged use of chemical weapons in April of 2017 and in April of 2018. In September, a senior U.S. official said there was evidence showing chemical weapons were being prepared by Syrian government forces in the last major rebel stronghold in the country. A Pentagon spokesperson in that statement said the Assad regime must not repeat the use of chemical weapons in Syria. There should be no doubt as to our determination to act strongly and swiftly should the Assad regime use these weapons again in the future. And the State Department statement accused Russia and Assad's forces of continuing a disinformation campaign to create the false narrative that others are to blame for the chemical weapons attacks. The facts, however, are clear. The Assad regime itself has conducted almost all verified chemical weapons attacks that have taken place in Syria, a conclusion the United Nations has reached over and over and over again. So we will know here in the next day or two.
Sure.
We will know without question whether they did it.
Yep. I don't know if you're the U.S., I don't know what you do right now. I don't know. You're going to have a great cooperation from the international community on something like this. And so far, nothing has been done against Syria when they've done this before. So what
well,
do you
as do? I just mentioned, we right. the Trump administration has hit them twice, bombed,
yep.
bombed
well,
them twice.
But I'm talking about the international cooperation. Where has the real international cooperation been? Think about it. It's the opposite. It's Russia and siding with Syria.
Right, but the United Nations has backed the attacks of it. And that's, I think, more than anything, that's what the United States is looking for. The United States will do, if there's going to be the attacks, the United States would be primarily responsible, maybe Great Britain on it, maybe France on it, but it would be a United States military operation. Mm-hmm. But what they don't want is the United Nations taking the side of Syria and Russia on it.
Right.
Which so far has not happened.
Right. But you haven't seen that great cooperation except for the okie dokie thumbs up from the United Nations. My question is where's the outrage from those other four nations? And so far we haven't seen that on a great level. My point is, how much do we have to take from Assad? How much do we have to see him do before something is really done? And I don't know where that threshold is. But here we are. I mean, it was what? How many months ago that the president decided we're going to draw down the troops in Syria? We're going to pull away? And then we wonder why Iran is seemingly gaining power inside that entire region? There was a reason we were there. In fact, a number of reasons we were there. And I wonder if you're the administration right now, what do you do beyond what you have done so far, which hasn't stopped Assad yet?
I thought this was a really interesting poll. According to a new Harvard-Harris poll, most Americans widely underestimate the number of illegal immigrants entering the United States each month. The Harvard-Harris poll found that 87% of respondents guessed that the number of border apprehensions was lower than they were. A majority, 52%, estimated the rate was less than 100,000 per year, which, as we have seen, they're now 100,000 per month.
Right.
So the estimate is 10 times from the majority, 52% of Americans. It's a lot less than it actually is. I find that amazing in the fact that I do think that the administration has, over the last couple of years, articulated what the situation is. I just think that I believe this may be the Maureen Dowd mindset, which is
head in the sand.
We just think what we're going to think, and we don't care what the truth is. And if we hear something that doesn't fit our narrative, we just bury our heads in the sand.
My friend Raul Ortiz, an old high school buddy of mine, is the sector chief at Del Rio Border Sector Chief, Border Patrol Sector Chief, and told Fox News a little over a week ago that what they're doing right now, what the cartels are doing, what they're doing with the human smuggling is an effort to set up shields in other parts of the border entry. So they set up a deterrent over here. In other words, they know they can pull the manpower if they throw a bunch of humans over the border at this location. And when they do that, they deplete the manpower at other crossings or other illegal crossing sites in order to get drugs across. If you think about where the president was as a candidate in 2016 on this issue and how much has changed, all the numbers that have ramped up since he became president, he's got the case, he's got the entire situation working for him, whether it's in the courts or the backing of the American people. The evidence works for him very clearly. Yet we can't get a wall built. A man can give birth. The president just wants to build a wall.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner Team Run Smart Pro Henry Albert has achieved some very impressive fuel mileage numbers. Henry shares the specs on his truck and his trailer, starting with what's under the hood.
I'm in a 2018 Cascadia Aero X. It's powered by the integrated drivetrain Detroit Series 60 DD15, 400 horsepower, 1,750 foot-pounds of torque at 975 RPM, and that's fed into the Detroit DT12 direct drive transmission with a final axle ratio of 2.16 with active lube management, riding on Michelin X1 tires, pulling a fully aerodynamic trailer. The trailer is equipped with a nose cone. It's also equipped with full-length skirts from Fleet Engineers to go completely over the landing gear, completely over the trailer tandem, all the way to the rear bumper. The rain gutter has been plated over, and it's running a Stemco trailer tail. My main run, which is from Charlotte to Laredo, and I'm usually 60 to 65,000 pounds, I was averaging over 10 miles of the gallon. It was up to 10.1.
To learn more about Henry's fuel mileage achievements, go to TeamRunSmart.com. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Quickly, we want to go to David in Chicago, who's trying to make a point that we want to address. David, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you. Before the half-hour break, I think you said that there was ample precedent for White House counsel not to testify. And, of course, since I'm, you know, about 10 years older than you guys, I think, I was in graduate school during Watergate. And, of course, the White House counsel, John Dean, testified. He's
right.
Former at that point.
Right. Not the same precedent. He wasn't forced to testify. Dean had already admitted to Justice Department officials that were doing an investigation on him, which was the executive branch. He knew that he was in big trouble. He also believed that Nixon, in a phone call and another conversation, attempted to set him up for the entire fall for paying off the Watergate conspirators to keep quiet. And so he already had told that all to the Justice Department. He knew he was in deep trouble. And in order, he eventually, testified in front of the Watergate committee. And then because he made it known to Nixon, I'm going to testify, because everybody at that point was trying to save their own butt. He voluntarily decided to do it, knowing he was going down. That's a completely different. That's got nothing to do with the precedent of Congress demanding that you testify before them.
Right.
That's the difference. So just want to make that clear to you.
And it's also obviously something very clear, a clear difference too. Laws were broken.
Oh yeah. Well, Dean knew they had them.
And in this case, purely politically
right.
driven.
And John Dean eventually pleaded guilty.
Mm-hmm. It might be a much different situation with McGahn had they found something solid on Trump and people
right.
on the campaign and everything else, and they were actually moving forward with impeachment. Could be a completely different situation. But it's not, and that's the clear difference there is, we know of the laws that were
right.
broken.
Totally.
And they knew of the laws that were broken
right.
during that time, at that time.
Right.
By that time. So here, no law has been broken.
Yeah. It wasn't Congress demanding under subpoena that Dean
right.
Dean's told, and in fact made it known to Nixon in one phone call, I'm testifying.
Right.
I'm going before, I'm saving my butt. You knew about this.
Yeah.
And Dean believed Nixon was trying to blame it on him.
Yeah. This is more akin to Michael Cohen than it is yeah. McGahn.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.